Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What's good, internet? It is March 31st, 2017. Oh. Welcome to Waypoint Radio. We're coming to you live from Lobby 1 in Vice HQ in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
The Williamsburg Waypoint.
New York.
That's right.
Danielle Riendo joining me.
How
also
you doing?
Joining me via the internet, Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And our very own Rob Zachney.
Straight from the Venice HQ here on the Best Coast.
I miss it.
Okay, disagree.
I miss it.
I can't get mad at you right now, Rob.
Because
I have to. I don't know. Am I mad at Twitter? What am I? I mean, time
You're
out.
You're exasperating.
I'm always mad at Twitter.
Correct.
Fuck off Twitter. Thank you for helping me get a career.
We're not even talking about the yesterday thing. We're not even talking about the at replies.
I mean,
that's yesterday's travesty.
That's yesterday. Today is the 31st.
Patrick, can you read the thing you just read me? And I was like, no, we have to go live right now with this.
Twitter has changed the default profile photo from an egg to something more generic. And in their blog post explaining rethinking our default profile photo, one of their three reasons they give, we've noticed patterns of behavior with accounts that are created only to harass others. Often they don't take the time to personalize their accounts. This has created an association between the default egg profile photo and negative behavior, which is not fair to people who are still new to Twitter and haven't yet personalized their profile photo.
I'm glad they're thinking of the people who are really suffering.
The tweet where I saw this originally quoted was, I can't even pronounce what the person's Twitter name is, I apologize, it says, "Everyone, we do not like the Twitter eggs who yell at us. Please do something. Twitter, got it. Change the icon."
So they decided to make it like a boring silhouette of a person.
Yeah.
And they said, after deciding on a figure, we began our refinements. We had to determine how to bring inclusivity into our single default profile photo, given that we don't require people to specify their gender on Twitter. That's good.
That's good thinking at least.
We felt that a circle of the head in the figure still seemed masculine, even though it technically had no design characteristics to indicate it was a man. So for inspiration, we looked at how women are portrayed in generic wayfinding iconography such as bathroom signs, and noticed the only difference between the sexes is the shape of their clothing. And then, regardless, people have come to associate the circle head with masculinity. And because of this association, we felt it was important to explore alternative head shapes.
Okay.
Like, you know, that's a dude head. A circle is a dude head. So they went with this new head.
The Barney Rubble head.
They went
instead.
With the Barney Rubble.
Yeah, the Rubble image,
of all of their
if you
options
will.
Here, which is, they say, a more gender-balanced figure, which I'm not dissing their intentions.
Yeah, no, that's – I respect that.
I just
at
can't
–
I'm glad that I know I can call when someone's in my mentions now just like shouting slurs at me. I can just say, I got another fucking Barney Rubble yelling at
me. Yeah, you got your Rubbles.
I got my fucking Rubble at me.
If they wanted everyone to encourage people to change their
Rubble
avatars,
Razzles.
When you sign up for Twitter, just make it an anime avatar by default.
There you go.
You're
That's
just
all you gotta
get
do.
So many anime avatars yelling at you in 90 seconds now.
Austin, that is not any different than my everyday experience on Twitter. So please, come at me. Anime community.
But really, I mean, they're on the right track here, because when you're helming a rapidly growing and dynamic business like Twitter, and new users are flooding in to share their lives via Twitter, you've got to think about their experience. You don't want them associated with the robots creating Nazi accounts, with anime avatars and eggs. Those new users have to be introduced to Twitter the right way. We can't lump them in with
Nazis. we should just make them look like real woke bathroom signs. Mm-hmm. That's what that mm-hmm. conversation was.
I'm sure
that Twitter design, you can mention them on Twitter at design. I'm sure that there were lots of long meetings. I'm sure that blood and sweat and tears went into this.
There were a lot of meetings that went into this blog post.
An unbelievable
amount of bureaucracy was involved in what has occurred today.
Someone is furious that this is like gray on gray. There's no more color in these.
Someone's pissed.
Like, I fucking told them, it's hideous. It's so boring. Yeah. I get it, but really, really coming from the wrong place. Really maybe not addressing the things that they should be addressing on this platform.
Think about your hate speech. Think about that.
For instance, maybe
a little. Maybe just give it a thought. Speaking of your hate speech.
Is there a pivot here that you have?
Of
hate speech?
No, I guess not.
Okay. In my mind, we were going to talk about Destiny 2, and I didn't like that trailer, but I thought maybe hate speech was going a little too far.
It was a little too much. I understand.
Destiny 2 has a trailer.
That's
my big news point for the week, which is weird because I feel like we're playing into their hands.
Yeah, that's what they want us to do.
But maybe what they don't want to hear is I kind of didn't like the Destiny 2 trailer at all. So
what didn't you like about it?
All right, so like we set up the Rob, you wrote about the first Destiny teaser. So can you actually like let's set the context? Tell me about the first Destiny teaser and the context for it. The first Destiny 2 teaser.
Okay, so the original Destiny all took place in the last city, the last bastion of mankind, after all the Traveler's enemies showed up and destroyed the planet. The Destiny.
I need way more proper nouns to make this lore accurate.
So do I need to enunciate the capital letters?
Old Russia,
all the capital
letters. Right?
Thank you.
Old Russia?
Please enunciate all capital letters.
Yeah, so when the enemies of the Traveler came from across the stars and confined humanity to the last city where the Guardians defended the remnants of mankind from the likes of the Hive, the Fallen, the Cabal?
Yeah, the Cabal.
And the other shit.
The Vex.
The other shit is just how I think of all of Destiny's storytelling.
Well, hang on. The Vex are actually the good guys, but we'll get to the give that in a minute.
Wait, is that true?
We're going to get to this. We are going to get to this. So just be cool.
I'm going to calm the fuck down.
Okay, so the Destiny 2 teaser stars Cade 6, which is a sort of the hunter, the head of the hunter class in the original Destiny, voiced by Nathan Fillion, who was always basically channeling Mal Reynolds from Firefly. And the Destiny teaser plays that up. He is now fully Robo Mal Reynolds. He's sitting in a bar telling a sad-ass story to someone about how the last city fell. And he was just hanging out, and, like, the wall blew in, and then he had to shoot his way out of there, and now they're all kind of on the run. And so that kind of set up this notion that, like, one, that, hey, Destiny 2 is going to be, like, more lighthearted and fun, right? Like, you love Mal Reynolds. Mm-hmm. You love Firefly. You're going to love Destiny 2. This isn't going to be, like, Destiny Year 1. This isn't going to be, like, Rise of Iron. This is going to be, like, the good parts of The Taken King, which were all about you being bros with Robo Mal.
Nathan Fillion?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So, and then we get this trailer the other day.
This new one from yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Which to me felt like, boy, trying to have it both ways. Trying to like maintain like that old Destiny, but then also like also be that fun new like irreverent Destiny.
So what, give the people who haven't necessarily seen it yet, like the breakdown of what that trailer looked like.
Well,
I do something very nerdy, which is look for my favorite grimoire card.
Oh, I was doing that this morning. I was like neck deep in the grimoire this morning preparing for the show.
I love the grimoire.
I'm just going to hang up this Skype call.
I love the grimoire.
Patrick, by
neck deep in the grimoire, name of the episode.
By the time
put that out there.
We're through with you, Patrick. You are going to love it.
Come around.
Of course you like Dark Souls 2 and Grimoire cards.
I'm academic, baby.
He didn't even need... Actually,
citations.
Austin hasn't read any of the Grimoire. He just knows it's called the Grimoire. And he's like, oh, hell yeah.
Marginalia. Here are... I'm showing
Danielle. Oh, here we go. He's showing
like,
me.
Like, I have pages of my favorite Grimoire cards.
There are a lot of screenshots here. For
this
sure.
This is for real.
Wow. Upgrade memories?
We're good. Don't even worry about it.
Oh, good.
So we're not quite at the part of the dramatic readings, because I got a reading for you later.
Thank you.
So this trailer that came out yesterday that follows on the heels of that teaser is Cade Six and Commander Zavala, who's like the head of the Last City. They're both in separate settings, both addressing the survivors of the Last City and giving an inspiring speech. And Zavala is giving your very standard, like, Destiny Year One, ponderous, plotting, conventional, heroic speech. And Cade Six is off giving Mal Reynolds, trying to inspire people, but actually he's scaring the shit out of them because he's too meta about the entire thing.
A little too flippant, and yeah.
Yeah, well, you're going to die, but it's going to be cool. And so Zavala's giving this speech, Cade's giving his. You see clips of the fall of the Last City, a huge like hole blown in the wall, which is actually kind of a cool image if you played the original Destiny. But nevertheless, and then it sort of ends with Cade Six sort of running out of things to say. He knows he hasn't sold it, and then he's like, "And there's gonna be loot," and everyone goes like batshit crazy. And Destiny 2 pre-order today, and so it was like this really split personality trailer that maybe was like very ironic about the entire thing, but also kind of felt like it was trying to, again, sort of have both of Destiny's identities without really resolving the conflict in them.
Before you guys continue down this discussion, because the Bungie doesn't handle the marketing for Destiny.
Good to know that.
Activision handles the marketing for Destiny. If you look at this trailer in the context of the Call of Duty bro trailers they've made over the years, it fits in extremely well. And so I would just caution people, based on what I know, wink, to like don't read too much into this trailer. Like, that doesn't mean like the chief creative principals that worked on The Taken King.
That's totally
the best,
fine.
The best part of Destiny, like as someone that really disliked Destiny and then got into it, largely based on the improvements and tonal changes in Taken King that I thought struck a pretty good balance. Those people didn't work on Rise of Iron. Like, those people went to go work on Destiny 2, and I would say there's reason to, like, you know, there's reason to have
very
faith
hopeful
that the game will be very different than what they are promoting in a CG trailer.
Do you know? I guess the thing is, like, my question mostly is, given so a marketing team gets a deck of material, and that's like, what is this game about? I'm going to break it down into five things, and we're going to like try to sell that to a wide audience. Obviously, I think like a loot cycle is going to be like, people love to get new loot. And the thing for me that I keep coming back to is, was there just a note that said, oh, we're going to do more characterization, we're going to do more focus on Cade Six, and that's all the marketing team knew, and so they built this trailer around that? Like, I'm curious what the marketing insights actually were. My hope is that this specific like vibe is not in Destiny 2. But I guess I'm still, I don't know, like, Part of me is concerned that the stuff in Taken King with Cade worked really well, and that they're going to end up leaning in too hard. But I'll try to carry your faith in me, Patrick.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I could be completely off here, and that the game itself like really hits that tone. But my understanding of the way this is not like a huge scoop. Like, developers don't control the marketing of their games, and like it's not uncommon for tone of marketing to hyperbolize or play up elements of a game that are the most marketable. And if you think about what's the most marketable part of The Taken King, if they're taking a tone or an approach on that to Destiny 2, like, it's Nathan Fillion. Like, that's an easy sell for a commercial. And look, the game is a lot about a loot cycle. So making a reference to that, is it easy to see in a marketing meeting how someone thinks that's fucking hilarious? Like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to see how this happens, and I just would caution people to not read too much into it. And that's not because I have, you know, a huge amount of insight into Destiny 2 as much as a huge amount of insight into how this split usually happens and the kinds of people I know that are working on that game. So I would just,
I'm going to get Rachel Maddow in here, and she's going to lay it all out. We'll do a 15-minute intro. Yep. Patrick Klepek used to work at 1UP.com. 1UP.com. Where Luke Smith, everybody.
Smith indeed.
Luke Smith is a brilliant guy, no doubt. Luke Smith is a brilliant. This is my hot Rachel Maddow.
I was gonna say, like, for a second, I was lost, and I was like, "Oh, I see."
Maddow. For unfortunately, the only thing I talked to Luke Smith about is the shitty new Weezer album. So,
that's fair.
He's no help there.
Shout out to Rachel Maddow.
She was here last week.
She was. That's
true. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Patrick and Danielle as the two people who, so like Rob and I. Clearly have a weird affinity for the lore in Destiny,
which we'll
get to. But I'm curious from both of you, like, what is it, especially you, Danielle, as someone who just does not like Destiny at all, is there something that they could do to bring you in? And Patrick, like, what is it that you're hoping for, generally speaking, with that game?
So it's not that I don't like Destiny. It's that I've played it 4 or 5 times, and I don't remember a second. I remember, like, just fleeting moments. I remember being on a speeder bike. I remember doing a dance or something at some blue Mass Effect-looking space. I just don't remember a fucking thing about playing this game. And I know everybody dunks on it, and, like, it's totally cool if a thing is not for me. The thing that they can do, which I know that they have done, according to – I talked with Kirk Hamilton of Kotaku on Twitter the other day. Apparently, Claudia Black was a voice in this game at one point. And I might be a little bit – I might have a little – fangirl crush on Claudia Black.
She's a great voice actress.
So if she were like the star, there's I would play damn near anything that she was actually the star of. Like if she was like hanging out with if it was Robo, you know, Aaron's son from Farscape as the like main whatever character in the game, I would play anything. I would play like Connect Four endlessly. If she would talk to me the whole time. So that's the thing
Danielle
Bungie can do.
She ran the post office.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
That's you could spend real money. You could give her real money.
See, that's the thing. Like, if it's like that tiny of a part of the game, it's like this.
The voice acting.
It's not
that, that was me channeling Scorpius, by the way, when he breaks the news to Crichton.
I liked
about
that a lot.
What,
John.
He made Priceline commercials.
The thing about that game is I think it has a lot of good voice acting, and it just hasn't often had the opportunity to leverage that. Again, that's part of what made Taken King so good. But again, yeah, Patrick, what is your deepest hope for Destiny 2?
Well, I just wanted a sequel to Taken King. Like, and I'm less like I could really give two shits about the lore of Destiny. Like,
he's wrong.
My
okay.
appreciation of Destiny was the like they. It feels it is the best playing shooter of
totally
like the last. I don't know, like, in recent memory, like, it is just fun as hell to play, like, just the tactile sensation of, like, pointing, aiming, movement, getting around is extremely satisfying, and, like, I, just like most normal humans, like it's literally can get addicted into a loot cycle of finding stuff, and I found it satisfying to the way they set up challenges to achieve those things in the Taken King, and I found that they streamlined a lot of the cruft that made it difficult to find that stuff in the original base game, where you had to, you know, the way they presented the base game of, you know, playing through a horrible single player story and then being like, that's it. But if you like kept going beyond there, then you discover some of the stuff that people that got really into Destiny were going on and on about during the during that period of time before they kind of streamlined it. And so my hope was to a further streamlining, which is why I was encouraged by the fact that they're ditching all the equipment and things like that. Because while I'm sympathetic to the time investment of people who have put in probably thousands of hours versus my 50 or 60, by ditching that, it indicated to me that they recognized a lot of the fundamental problems that were stopping so many people from seeing the cool stuff that was there, because you had to get over so many hurdles to even discover what was interesting about Destiny, beyond just the fact that the, you know, left trigger, right trigger feels really good. And so
feels really good.
And so I'm hoping they can build on that. And so that's what I want of Destiny 2, is just I want them to take the Taken King, things that worked well there, and just continue down that path and see where it takes them. And by all accounts so far, that's happened.
Is that game 6 more zones of Destiny? Do you know what I mean? I guess for me, my question is, like, does the fundamental structure of Destiny shift at all in Destiny 2? Destiny 1, I think in everyone's mind playing the alpha in the, like, months before release, a lot of people felt like, oh, okay, that's one of 20 zones. and it's going to be this huge, massive thing. And instead, it was like one of five planets, and then a raid after a month or two, and then some DLC down the line. I'm curious if that's the same general structure of Destiny 2. Like, I'm curious if that's still going to be like, all right, well, first I'll go to this place, and then I'll go to another one, and there's going to be seven of those, and that's enough. Or if there's going to be a more fundamental change in what levels look like, if it's going to end up looking more like Phantasy Star Online, or more like Diablo, or more, you know what I mean? Like, for me, those are I'm very curious to see how they structure this thing.
And I'm actually hoping for a fundamental shift away from a level-based grind to get the most out of the game. Like, I'm fine with loot, but the whole light structure of the game in which you were just dumping hours and hours into, like, the night strikes and things like that, not because you enjoyed it, but because you just needed to be able to pump enough bullets into a thing to go experience a piece of content. Like, I get why that should exist a lot on the high end, but I think they need to – I would appreciate a more fundamental dismantling of – not the game has to be entirely skill-based, but the grind that occurs after investing maybe 15 hours in, like, really wore me down in Destiny, where it's like, if you're not willing to invest 15 hours a week, then you just can't keep pace with some of the stuff that's coming out, and that was a bummer as someone that was more of a casual player.
I think – something that I would like to see a little more is that the absolute best stuff to do in Destiny was also the hardest stuff to do from, like, a logistical standpoint, right? Like, their raids were so freaking good. They were such well-crafted, well-engineered puzzle boxes and dungeons and required such, like, coordination. And, like, it was a really cool thing, like, 2 hours into a raid where your team is finally sort of dialed in, and then you have that, like, magical experience where, like, you know, there's comms discipline, you know, people are calling targets, like, everything's going beautifully. That is such a good
experience. Have a fleet commander. You basically have to have an e-fleet commander who's telling you when and where to be dunking on the boss.
And it's
I'm a big fan
a great experience that I did a scant handful of times because that required there was no good matchmaking for it. And it was kind of this binary where you either had a full, like, squad of friends that you could go with. Was it six people? I think it was six.
Six in a raid. Yeah.
Which is a tough group to get together in a lot of cases, especially when your friends are a little more casual in their relationship with Destiny.
Yeah, and then I never got to experience a raid until I enlisted a Sherpa. Like, I went on Twitter and just said, I don't play Destiny with a hardcore group of friends. I matchmake and do the strikes, and occasionally I group up with friends, but I didn't have a core group like a lot of the more hardcore Destiny players that I know and I know exist. And so I said, I don't really have a way into the raid.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I don't want to, you know, there were matchmaking websites where you could say, you know, essentially looking for group and people could find others to get together to play a raid. But if I did that, I knew I was going to be grouped with people that knew what they were doing, and I was going to be a drag, so I didn't want that situation. And there was just a guy on Twitter who said, hey, my friends and I would do the raid every single night. We could literally do it without you. So if you just want to come along, we'll guide you through it, and you can see what the raid's all about. And so I sat down one night and did the Taken King raid that would normally take you, you know, a couple of hours. But I think we did it about 90 minutes. And it was fucking awesome. And I got a glimpse into stuff that other people were
nice.
I did it. There's a video of me and Jeff Gerstmann and Brad Shoemaker doing it with some Giant Bomb community people. And it took us like 6 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I would love it if I understood Bungie's approach to lack of matchmaking for raids, because they are right that if you were just matched up with a bunch of random people, there is a good chance that you're going to have a bad experience and think that the raid is potentially bad. But I think they need to, even if they don't necessarily go as far as just giving random matchmaking, two rates, which I think they should just do because I don't actually think there's a downside.
People will figure it out.
Like, the people that will bounce off of it, they were just never going to try it in the first place, possibly. Yeah. But I would also love it, like, this whole Sherpa concept, like, if they were able to encourage groups or players to be those kinds of guides for, like, imagine if they're you could literally sign up to be a Sherpa and you were getting rare rewards for being the kind of player that was helping other people get through a raid, or if you were a group that could sign up to do that, and, like, you could bring in one or two people so that the group isn't brought down by a bunch of random people trying to figure out how the raid works. Like, stuff like that, I think, would go a long way to making the high-end content that, like, legitimately, I think, like, looking at our chat on Twitch, like, people are, like, legitimately bummed, like, hey, I'm a parent that plays by themselves, which means I can't experience all this cool stuff.
I can't get five people together around a 6-hour period. It's not a thing I have time for.
Yeah, and so this idea that, like, you know, a 6-hour raid that you have to learn from beginning to end becomes a 90-minute thing if you can be just guided through by people that know what they're doing. I think there are ways where they can ease people into some of the cooler stuff for the high-end players. And this was my problem with, like, the Rise of Iron as well when I jumped into it, which came a year later after Taken King, in which I jumped into it, I had no idea what any of, like, the material I had. Like, this just Destiny has a fundamental problem with streamlining what it is you're supposed to do to find the best stuff that rewards the most hardcore players but punishes people that aren't on the hamster wheel that the high-end players are. And so that's my hope for a lot of Destiny 2, is finding ways to make all that meet in the middle.
There was also for me just a – or I guess the thing I want to say here is there had been a disconnect between the stuff that was in the raids and the stuff that was in – all of the rest of the game content. It wasn't in Strikes, it wasn't in the regular single-player stuff or the main campaign stuff, and I want to see that divide collapse. I want to see the really interesting style of mechanics that show up in raids show up throughout the campaign. I need there to be the inclusion of something, like, mechanically twisty in regular missions. I want the Strikes to have, like, little fun platforming sections that don't make me tear my hair out, but are still, you know, that are
something
really
that switches it up a little.
Right. Yeah. And, like, so that's the other way that you could bring some of the raid mechanics to a wider audience, is by, like, baking them in to the main really achievable stuff.
Yeah, or even if, like, you were to take the raids are built into, like, rooms, essentially, like different sections, you know, that lead up to the entire raid. You could easily take out bits and pieces of the raid and allow. Now, I'm not saying you should deconstruct a raid so you can just, like, go into room two all your experience, but I think it's building on this idea that you're talking about, Austin, of taking those design ideas, and rather than it being this huge long raid commitment, because the idea of a raid is that you're committing to something. I understand that idea and I don't disagree with it as a concept, but I think you're right that there is a lot of room for growth in taking those ideas. And If a Night Strike was essentially like a raid type thing, but it was just one of those rooms and it was something you could finish in an hour or an hour and a half, as opposed to, you know, the big long stretch of solving an entire raid.
Totally. This was also just my problem with Rise of Iron, was, like, it should have done that stuff. Even Taken King's story missions had some additional interesting stuff going on. Rise of Iron's just, like, kind of didn't. So anyway, really what I want to talk to you about here is the darkness. Which, you know, there have been centuries of debate that have given birth to competing arguments about the nature of the darkness and the collapse. The Pajari position describes the darkness as a force with both physical and moral presence, an actualization of evil.
Oh, there goes Patrick.
Pajari art depicts the darkness as a great storm, or as a change in conduct, a corruption that emerged from within and poisoned the Golden Age. Saint 14's position, on the other hand, it argues that the darkness was an invading armada, an alien force of incredible but tangible power.
He's actually leaving his house.
Some
now.
Adherents believe that this armada sprang from species rejected or discarded by the Traveler for their sins. That's only two positions.
He's coming back. Ulan
Tan's thesis considers the darkness a necessary symmetry to the Traveler in a cosmic balance. In this view, the Traveler's goodness led it to the sacrifice for others.
Yep.
And it's up to us to return this goodness by healing the Traveler.
Can we have ABB come in and rate position, this stuff?
Or the deflationary position,
which
considers the darkness as, like, a technologically sophisticated force.
Sure.
Perhaps a post-singularity intelligence. There's also the actoplectic cause, which claims that we are intrinsically unable to understand the darkness. This is the shit that's not in the game at all, and I don't mean – I would love a codex to be in the game. I would love – I would obviously just love to be able to read this in the game. But what I really would love is for there to be the notion that people live in this world. Hmm. The grimoire cards present that notion because what they suggest is like, oh, shit, all of our lives changed. And yeah. Every once in a while, you get like a flash of it in Destiny. You get like someone from like the New Monarchy talking shit about someone in Future War Cult. But that never – finds its way into the game content, into like going to play a mission. And it kills me because the society in this world would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Danielle and I were having a conversation before this podcast started about the fucking moral ramifications of like basically being Dr. Manhattan.
Having the superpower of being able to manipulate matter at specifically. All forms, basically.
Yeah. And how like maybe doing good has some negative consequences. Like
we went in deep.
Philosophy 101 shit. But like, I think the Traveler does – I expected that stuff in the first Destiny. Like when I started that game, I was like, oh, well, the Traveler is obviously the bad guy. Like that's going to be the big reveal at the end.
Well,
right?
And also because every player character is reanimated dead things.
Right.
Do you know the story about that in terms of the dev cycle?
No.
Patrick, you've definitely heard this thing, right?
Yeah.
That like – and I don't know if you have – so
no, I have no
you
idea.
Start the game no matter what character race you pick being pulled up to life from being a corpse. The ghost, which is like the little robot AI companion.
The Peter Dinklage, but not anymore.
Right, Dinklebot, the Nolan okay. North. The Dinklebot.
Dinklebot.
It's like, oh, that's a good body. Brah, now you're alive again. You work for us. And that was originally only supposed to be the intro for the Exos, which are the race of robots.
Okay.
Every species was supposed to have its own intro sequence. And that just did not come together. like if you were a – oh, wait, did I say Exo? Or is it the Exo the – what are the,
yeah, the
robot
people?
Guys?
Oh, Fallen.
No, that's wrong.
No, Fallen have – the
Ascended, the
the Reefers.
Destiny,
the,
Blue,
they live on
they
the reef.
Are the Reefers. The, yeah, they do live on the reef.
Reapers?
The Reapers. That's a different – no, it's
no.
different.
No. Reavers?
Question things. I'm going to go to GameFAQs. Question about
Reaver,
the blue
Reaper,
people.
Reefer.
Is there any way to play a game without them showing up?
Zora?
Nope, that's not possible.
Rito.
They weren't the Zora.
It's Awoken. It's Awoken. Austin, it's Awoken.
The Awoken.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
You knew a thing.
No, I don't know a thing. I had
Patrick,
to stop this.
He knew the,
Patrick knew
the lore.
It. He felt it deep in his heart.
He knew the lore.
Oh, yeah, the lore has awoken inside me.
Patrick, I think it was the darkness.
Never let.
I think that's what happened. When he was talking about the darkness, it possessed Patrick.
Patrick,
rough.
Never let Twitter tell you you're not awoken. You're
I'm a very progressive awoken games writer.
God, I'll bet it is so passive aggressive on the reef. Like, oh, she's always asking that. She's acting more awoke than I am. That's bullshit.
Fuck. They also have different
it's a
intro
Donald
sequences.
Donald Glover song about that too.
Well, and it's also, you know, like that's, you know, go read Jason Schreier's like account of
it's
Destiny's
so
development, which builds upon the already known troubled history of that game, in which the storytelling and world that was built up had to be trashed like midway through development. Like, there's a lot of reasons that Destiny came out as hobbled as it did, which like the quality standards of that game across the board, storytelling, mission design, were just not what people expected from Bungie. Mm-hmm. And everything from what I understand is they knew that. And all the reporting has suggested they knew that as well. So that's also what makes me excited about Destiny 2 is like it's a redo, you know, to kind of tee it up all over again. It's like, okay, if we're going to make the game we really meant to make the first time around, you know, what does that look like? And I'm curious what that looks like from a storytelling standpoint, too. Like, what direction they end up taking with it.
Me too. And I hope that they figure out a way to, like I said, just weave some of that stuff in a way that, like, doesn't necessarily retcon what was already there, but doesn't address some of those loose-hanging threads in a way that's accessible for a wide audience. Like, I get the game that they're making. They are making a game that they want millions and millions and millions of people to play. And so you're going to need to have your, like, your smarmy, like, hunter dude who is basically just Mal Reynolds. You're going to need to have your brash, like, soldier guy. And, like, I get it. Those are the characters that you have already. I want you to do something really cool with those. I there was a comment earlier in our chat from user Rick Rockman who says, IMO, the best parts of Destiny are where the guns have names like Vision of Confluence, not where the characters have personalities ripped off from the Star Wars extended universe.
And that's the harshest of burns.
It is. The thing is, I think there's maybe a reading that is less harsh. That is just like, I don't mind there being those personalities. There are parts of the Star Wars extended universe that I have fondness for.
Sure.
I grew up reading those books.
Me too.
Totally. I like a lot of those characters. And I would love to see some of those characters, that sort of characterization in Destiny.
Be fun.
But I would like some of the flavor, some of the like Moon Wizard flavor to actually be more than throwaway lines, and actually there should be a sense of awe when you stand before some of the places
in this grimoire card that I've had pulled up on my computer for about 5 minutes.
I knew I hired you for a good reason.
So this is something – bye, Patrick. So this is something you find after you've been to the Black Garden, which is this like really cool – and this is the other thing. There's so many cool settings in Destiny.
So many cool settings.
Imply like cool possibilities for the universe, uh-huh. And then it doesn't really do anything. It's just another gun corridor. But you go to the Black Garden, which is this like giant cyborg hedge maze.
Patrick took out a fucking Stephen King book. Like, that bullshit isn't just more deep with the stuff in.
Are you fucking kidding me?
This is how he fights fire with fire, you guys. That's how it works.
Anyway.
Tell me about the gunslinger, Patrick.
Yeah.
Shut up. Do you want to talk about how Stephen King's It and Salem's Lot tie into the Dark Tower? Come at me. Come at me.
This is what you've just done is revealed that you have a Twitter alt with an anime avatar.
Oh,
basically.
No.
Pat or Rob,
actually,
I'm sorry.
It might be an It avatar.
It might be.
Spoiler, Patrick, humanity dies, but it's the real monster all along.
Oh, fuck.
Anyway, so the Vex, the robot cyborg people have built this like really cool like cyborg hedge maze called the Black Garden. It's awesome. But in the grimoire, you discover like this account of someone who like had visions of it and may have been in dialogue with the Vex. Mm. And there's this account that says, "The garden grows in both directions. It grows into tomorrow and yesterday. The red flowers bloom forever. There are gardeners now. They came into the garden in vessels of bronze and they moved through the groves and rivers of thought. This is the vision I had when I leapt from the shores of time and let myself sink. I walked beneath the blossoms. The light came from ahead, and the shadows of the flowers were words. They said things, but I will not write them here. At the end of the path grew a flower in the shape of a ghost. I reached out to pluck it, and it cut me with a thorn. I bled, and the blood was light.
Yes, Lord.
The ghost said to me, 'You are a dead thing made by a dead power in the shape of the dead. All you will ever do is kill. You do not belong here. This is a place of life.' 'The traveler is life,' I said. 'You are a creature of darkness. You seek to deceive me.' But I looked behind me down the long slope where the blossoms tumbled in the warm wind and the great trees wept sap like blood or wine, and I felt doubt. When my ghost raised me from the sea, there was a thorn cut in my left hand, and it has not healed since."
It's really fucking good. Sorry,
is that
Patrick.
Black metal
it's
song,
a grimoire
right.
that subverts the entire
right.
premise of Destiny.
Right.
And it's like just...
Right.
And you're not meant to see it. It's this like really troubling yeah. like
right.
existential thing. There are lore landmines in the fiction of Destiny that the game just like, oh, just have fun with like Robo Mel Reynolds. It'll be great. And in the meantime, in this grimoire card, it's like, you know, what if actually you're just a reanimated zombie killing something
yep.
for an evil power beyond your understanding?
I get it. It's not going to be that game. Like, that's not the thing we're going to get, but I want a taste of it.
Patrick
I want, and also,
Patrick
I want the I want the grimoire to be in the game. I want to be able to hit pause and go to a codex and then have that read to me in Rob's luscious
yeah,
voice.
It should be in your voice.
Please.
Rob. Definitely.
I want to go on
we'll
Open Table
them.
And book a 7:30 date at the grimoire.
And that's where Rob
oh,
reads.
That's where Rob reads.
From
right, exactly. It's the new social you know, space.
I'll go to a restaurant where it's just Rob reading grimoire cards in the corner while soft piano music plays.
Definitely.
But this is a real thing, which is think about the fan communities around World of Warcraft, around Overwatch, around all of these other Activision Blizzard properties. And obviously, this is not Blizzard, right? But one of the great things about The Taken King, if you read a lot of Jason Schreier's reporting, is that the devs at Bungie like got in touch with some of the devs on like Diablo 3 and were like, how did you fix that game? Because we're trying to fix our game too. So I think there's definitely communication there. Those are games with deep fan communities that have expanded on sometimes very little material to create vast, interesting webs of fan works. That doesn't happen that often with Destiny, and it could. Like, there's enough in that grimoire and in the margins of this world that could support a really, like, vivid, interesting fan community. There could be Destiny RP clans.
Zarya could be walking through this Black Garden.
That's all I'm saying.
You know?
And so I just want them to have more character, and by that I don't just mean more jokes. And that's like my big hope, on top of bringing more of the raid mechanics into let me shoot stuff in more interesting ways. Also, give it life, give it character, make it breathe, make it unique.
And let me date Eris Morn. What? I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Okay. She's the one with a blindfold on. She's the one who looks like 2B, Patrick. She's like 2B, but 2B. Like magic.
That's a weird statement to make, Patrick. Why do you want to date Eris Morn?
Weird.
My mic seems to be breaking up. I think I need to drop out of this call.
Yeah, I think we all need to drop out of this call, Patrick. I'm going to skip the question bucket this week because we have to give this room up. And also because over in the UK, Mike Diver is getting ready to do a post-Rez stream.
There's a live event.
Yeah. There's a gaming event called Rez, which I believe is indie game focused. It sounds like it. That's what I would name it.
They announced Warhammer, Total Warhammer 2, though, so how indie can it really be?
Who publishes that? Sega?
Sega, the indie of 2017.
Indie as fuck. It's a big show out there, EGX, Rez.
There's Ken Levine.
Also, Ken Levine, I guess there. So maybe indie is the wrong fucking word. No, he's not. Isn't he still at Take-Two?
Yeah,
he has 12 people working.
Oh, that's how that works. If you fire everybody, then
you know, if you fire everybody and you don't make a ton of money, then you're indie. I don't know.
Ken Levine orders 5 drinks when he goes to restaurants. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
That's a thing I know about the world now.
A man chooses
5 drinks.
5 drinks.
2 different iced teas, a coffee, a water, and a soda for himself. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
About the world. That's going to do it for us this week. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker.
At Grimoire Reader.
At Grimoire Reader, my After Dark account.
I hope so.
Where can you find you, Danielle?
You can find me at Danielle RI, and I'm gonna do a quick shout out. The video from my stream with Jorge from Vice Sports should be going up shortly. We played a baseball game. I know not a lot of folks here are probably that into a baseball video game, but if you are, I just wanted to shout it out. It was a really
fun time.
Watch
that stream. That'll go up on YouTube sometime soon, I believe. Rob, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Rob Zachney.
Nice. That is where you can find Rob. Patrick Klepek.
You can find me talking about how the first 4 books of The Dark Tower were great until Stephen King got in a car accident, feared for his life that he would never finish his masterwork, rushed through the last 3 books, and then fucked the whole thing up.
Yeah.
At Patrick Klepek.
That's a bummer. Is that what happened?
Yeah, the first four books.
He was hit by a car, right?
Yeah, he was hit by a car, almost died, and then he got a letter from this older woman. This part may be apocryphal or an interview from a long time ago, but basically said, like, what happens at the end of the Dark Tower? And he said, I don't know. And then he panicked, and then The Gunslinger was one of the first books he ever wrote as a kid. He revamped it and then created a whole Lord of the Rings type thing out of it, and then was doing the books at a pace kind of like George R. R. Martin, just like every once in a while he'd make another one. And then he put out the last couple of books in a really fast succession, and you can tell. And he has since said, yo, I fucked that up. Maybe I can fix it. He's actually said he wishes he could rewrite the whole series. I don't think he will, but...
Could you? What would you...
He could. He is such a prolific writer.
That's
I believe
interesting.
In his
there is... I don't want to spoil The Dark Tower, but there's some interesting things about the movie in which Stephen King can potentially accomplish his own goals if it became a movie franchise. So,
correct.
We'll
fans of the genre will know what I'm talking about.
I also got Ken Levine's order wrong. It was a Diet Coke, a whiskey, a hot tea, an iced tea, and a water. Thank you, Internet. We will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. This is the life we all lead. Have a good, safe weekend. This is the first weekend I think I'm going to not do extra podcasting, so I'm going to try to relax.
You should play Nier. You should play Nier.
I'm going to. I'm like a second away from the ending A. I'm like very close.
Good.
I need to like get all of the Mass Effect out of my system. It's a game that I'm going to try to finish writing about today, and you'll hear my longer form thoughts. Got to get it out of my system, but yeah, so I'm going to try to play Nier. Everybody else, take a good couple days off. Yeah. See you on Monday. Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.